Most of us have photographs and written records to complement our memories of our childhoods. Annis Olina Black can rely on an extensive record of her childhood in the Applegate Valley. Her mother was both a photographer and a diligent diary keeper. Annis is our guest in this month's edition of Stories of Southern Oregon. The stories are collected in the Southern Oregon Digital Archive at the Hannon Library of Southern Oregon University. And Maureen Flanagan Battistella is the curator of the archive and doesn't appear to be with us today, but Annis Olina Black is here, and good to see you. Thanks for joining us today.
You're quite welcome. I'm pleased to be here.
So you had the full Applegate Valley experience growing up from the sounds of it. How long has your family been on that land?
They moved there in 1906, and they moved once. They got here in covered wagons in 1865, and they were out by the Shady Cove, mm-hmm. so a lot of that land around Shady Cove. There's a tree out there called the Lonesome Hickory, which Grandma brought a hickory nut from Missouri, planted it, and the tree lives. It's a heritage tree.
Wow, so it brought the nuts, actually the hickory nuts, from Missouri.
Yep,
wow.
Yep, in a covered wagon.
What part of Missouri do you know?
It was Audrin County, Mexico, mm-hmm. Missouri.
Okay, yeah, that's north central Missouri, north mm-hmm, of mm-hmm, the University mm-hmm, of Missouri, mm-hmm. where I went to school.
Ah.
Isn't that great? Okay, so did they come out here for a donation land claim, or what was the circumstance that drove them west?
The story is that there were bushwhackers in Missouri at that time. And they were accused of keeping people in their barns. And so there were barn burnings. And there was also this idea of starting over, a new government, fresh. The Civil War was tearing people north to south apart. And Missouri, of course, was a border state.
So, yeah, it actually was in the Union but had slaves. So it was, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. right. And so they picked up, and they were in their late 30s, early 40s. They had three kids when they left Missouri. And by the time they settled, only one of those grew up to an adulthood. And so they put their stuff together and wagon trained over to the Arch, St. Louis. Mm-hmm. And one of the children died on the way. She got into someone's provisions. Mm-hmm. Really tragic to hear. She was the oldest, and she was five, and she could count. And so there's a lot of grief in the diary. And the Mary Lou Wiza kept a diary. So we have her wagon train diary. And she stops once she gets to Oregon. So they settled out by Shady Cove, where their aunt and uncle were already residing, the Hannas. And the Hannas... they had a pottery, and they made the early pottery. So if you think about, well, what did they keep their food in? Because they couldn't bring a lot. They had these crockery, and they would pickle and brine and preserve food. So that first pottery was an important part of the development.
Sounds like you come from a whole family of diarists. I mean, everybody, you know, seems to keep records.
It seems to, mm-hmm. you know. I think it's also kind of a... Women had learned to read and write, in this, particularly in my family, and they married a lot of school teachers in. I think the family occupation was school teacher. And they, yes, you're right. There were diarists of my grandmother, but that's on my dad's side. And then my mother picked up the hobby, and she was a diarist all the way through her life from 1925 to, she was scribbling notes in her later years in 2007, so...
Well, so she married your father and moved to the farm in 1932, was it?
Yes, yes. She has kind of a fun story. She, her family was. She was born in Idaho, and they came to Oregon because they went broke in Idaho doing dairy, and they were looking for work, and they found the Rogue Valley. And mother was put out to be a mother's helper, so she went to work for some of the orchard families, which were a class above most of the people who were rolling around at the time. And they were so impressed with her that they paid her tuition to come over here to Southern Oregon University Normal School, and they paid her tuition for the first year. She worked the second year, so she graduated from normal school in 31. Well, she went out to teach, and she had her first job, and of course, within 6 months, she marries a local farmer and ends her teaching career.
Forever?
No, she went back. She taught in Gold Hill all during the 50s. Mm-hmm. There, she taught at Forest Creek, Rouche, Applegate, Gold Hill. She might have had another one in there somewhere. So she was a fourth grade mm-hmm. school
We got back to it once the kids were grown, it sounds like.
Yes, yeah, it was like economic imperative. Boy, she was going to raise the family's standard of living.
So she moved out to the farm in 1932, been in your father's family since 1906. There's a real mix of quality and not-so-great farmland in that area. What grew out there?
So in the early years, they had a pretty good... There's early stories of my dad, and they grew beans, you know, red beans and stuff for their own food. They grew enough hay to shelter over pigs. And then along in the middle of the 30s, in the diaries, you begin to see them saying, well, we're going to move over to cattle. So he had this little operation where he had four different pastures, and he'd move the cows from each pasture, and then he would hay it, put it in the barn, and then feed them over the winter. So that... And the cows in the summer would go up in the mountains. BLM land, you would be able to lease land. So they'd head up to the mountains. And I always thought this was fascinating. In order for them to come back, you didn't have to go out and round them up. You put a salt lick out and had this long log with niches in it, and you'd pour rock salt in it. And because as the grass gets drier in the year, it makes it harder for them to digest. So they come back, and they looking for that salt to help them digest the drier hay. And you'd hear the cowbell, and all of a sudden they'd be down by the salt lick.
Anna Selena Black is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. She's this month's Stories of Southern Oregon guest. Maureen Battistella curates the whole series of Stories of Southern Oregon and brought Anna Selena Black to us. The year that your parents got married, 1932, was one of the, you know, as the Depression was really reaching its darkest point. And I just wonder how hard life might have gotten for your mom and dad out there on the farm. Your mother certainly would have documented that, I would think.
She did, but the difference was for many of the farm families, they just went back to sustainable farming. So her entries all through that are the number of how much canning she did, the butchering of hogs. When somebody would kill a deer out of season, they sheared it all the way up in the creek, up and down the creek, so nobody would be. Everybody would be in on it, and nobody would rat on them. The shift from miners to farmers in that era, but the mining came back in that era too. So they started hydraulic mining. The hard rock mining had pretty much ended in the 1870s and 80s, but they reinstituted mining. So there was income from mining a little later. It was like 36, 37. But that was their main, you know, they produced and made everything. So you think they were cooking on a wood stove. Mm-hmm. They had no electricity. They had no running water. They did have a pipe part of the year from a well that they dug. So they had a pipe that came in for the stove. And she has multiple entries of how much she canned. I have 96 quarts, and then you hear another 40 quarts that Pa and Izzy did. And so that process of putting together a food, they had built a cellar. And you have to see a picture of it sometime, but they'd built a cellar, and they were able to store like a root cellar. So they had cabbages and meats. And I did ask my mom once, how did you cook during this era? What did you do? And she said most everything was brined or smoked. So there was a smokehouse, this cellar.
So treated and stored in some way or another.
Treated and stored. And you know, you wonder that they didn't get more diseases. They had a milk cow. Uh-huh. So many of the farms up and down Forest Creek were that kind of farm. They were the sustainable, and they just didn't notice the drop in economic. The trick was they had to grow enough and sell enough to pay the taxes.
Ah, yes, of course. There was some place they had to actually have some money available.
So growing turkeys, selling cream, selling eggs, selling cordwood. And the famous story in the family is that all of us kids except me was paid for by selling cordwood to Sacred Heart Hospital to run their furnaces and heat the place. So that was baby wood.
Anna Selena Black, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Growing up in the Applegate Valley is what we're talking about here. She is this month's guest in Stories of Southern Oregon, curated by Maureen Flanagan Battistella. It sounds like because there was some insulation from the economy outside, that there wasn't any particular reason for your mother to be pessimistic. I just wonder what kind of tone comes across in the diaries about those years of the Depression.
She and my dad, I think, had different issues about class. My dad thought that just getting by and getting along and sustainable was good, was great. My mother, because she'd worked for these orchard families, had a lot of the visuals of, the nicer house, and she wanted a house of her own. So there's this chronic complaint between the two of them of her wanting her house of her own.
So how many people were in the house? I mean, the extended family, several, sounds like four kids?
When she moved in, my dad's mother had died in 26. So he had three sisters, and by the time my mother showed up, the three sisters were now out and going to college, which was, well, I think working in town. So they had moved into town to work and go to high school. So that left my mother, her father-in-law, a hired hand, my dad, and then, of course, she started making babies in 33. So the first baby was born in 33. So that was pretty much the household when she moved there.
And I imagine this is a fairly modest house, considering where it is and the circumstances.
Clapboard house. Boy, and to keep it warm, she has other complaints in her diaries about all the things she did to improve the place. So moving from a fireplace to a wood heater was, dragging feet across, because everybody loved to sit in the fire in front of the fireplace. But once they got the heater in, everybody was thrilled with it because the rest of the house was warm.
Wow, the things that we take for granted now. You flick a switch in your thermostat and you're warm.
There are things you take, but you'd think these people had no technology. But there's a wonderful story in her diaries about building a phone line. So up above the top of Forest Creek, up at the top of the hill, there is a lookout. There's a mountain that they put a lookout on in 1936. So whoever was on the lookout, my dad got his second government job, and he would take water cans up to the lookout. And of course, in the middle of August, he had to take them from the springs down below, and it was a long hike. So there's some wonderful pictures of him with the horses. So there was no communication, and when he went on the lookout, they needed to talk back and forth. So they roll the wire up the hill, and then they roll the wire down the hill, and they meet. And she's just exhausted because they forgot to take enough water. And she's writing this story in her diary. And then about they get it hooked up. She's home. She's laying down. She's just crashed, right? And the thing rings. Not only does it ring, but it works. And she's going, darn, I wanted to be the first one to answer it.
So how long was that lookout tower staffed?
That lookout tower was staffed until 63. And now it is a translator station for the state police. And just recently, the state of Oregon went through a huge renovation of its communication system. So the Department of Transportation and the police updated them all. You know this story, because of 9/11, they wanted to merge the frequencies. Mm-hmm. So that now is a translator station, because you can see to Grants Pass, you can see into the Rogue Valley, and you can see up to Mount Ashland. Mm-hmm. So you have a good long line of sight from there.
Is the land out in the Applegate Valley on Forest Creek, is it still in your family?
No, that's a rather tragic story. The whole issue of transferring heritage land to the next generation, and I think Peter Sage is, got stories about that in his family, and we've got stories, and I'm watching the descendants of the Hannas. They're having those kinds of discussions now, too. The change in what we expect of land and what we expect it to be there for, of course, the economic has changed, and so no, my brother sold it, and I'm still pretty brokenhearted about it.
How long ago?
2012, and they were logging it within 4 days.
Oh, and it sounds like your mother was alive until the last decade.
No, my mother was alive. Yeah, my mother and father were both alive until 2007. They died within 5 months of each other, and mm-hmm. they had been married 55 years.
Wow, that's a great long record.
That is a long record.
There's the picture that was included with your appearance last fall at the Ashland Literary Festival. Was that you pulling mm-hmm, the tail mm-hmm, on the pig?
Mm-hmm. No, that was my sister.
Your sister, okay.
That was my sister.
Well, good for your mother for keeping as good a record as she did, both photographically and with the diaries, huh?
She had an interesting, I'm not sure quite sure where it came from, but she was starting to write diaries when she was in Jacksonville grade school in 1925, and the teacher came and stole it from her because she wasn't reading her book. She had had it hidden and was writing in it. So I think that kind of marshaled her. She treated it like her confidant. She talked, it was her personal outlet. And it, some of it's wonderful to read at this point, but some of it after, some of it is tough to read because she's really saying all the things she won't say to other people. But her ability to track facts and to track anecdotes and to keep, you know, we did his, we did here. So the story of the consolidation of the schools, she was a public school teacher. She was very interested in her later years in local history. And she and my dad wrote a book called Roosh and the Upper Applegate. Mm-hmm. And when she passed, I looked at those files and I said, you know, that's her intellectual history. And I'm not going to let it just get thrown to this. So I marshaled it together, put it in file cabinets, and have kept her diaries.
All right. Anna Solina Black, thanks so much for joining us this month to talk about this month's edition of Stories of Southern Oregon. Good to have you.